Hello, my name is Holly Hedgepeth, and I'm with the Cancer Services Program of Columbia and Greene County, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Oh, honey, I want to go upstate where the 20-somethings are covering themselves with their canvases in their car to keep warm during those cold summer nights. I want to go up to that Rev where that Jerry is. Wow, he's a real pistol. He's going to tell me a funny story and then get a biscotti from the old sliding glass case. Why do you sound like a pirate, honey? Oh, when I go to Hudson, I feel like a pirate. Oh, honey, I love seeing all the people frolicking in the fields with their mushroom patch. Oh, I get some of those mushrooms and get over to the St. Charles and start one of them whoop-de-doo parties.
Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday from 9:30 to midnight.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to health care and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Wavefun.
I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too.
Family is all in
marijuana.
That is David Peel and the Lower East Side. And this is Heather Martin. You are listening to Medical Freedom. We broadcast to you the second Monday of every month, 2 to 3 p.m. Today, I'm going to be joined by a special guest, Howard Tichu. I'm going to connect with him right now. So we're bringing on Howard. Just a moment. We are waiting to connect with Howard. We're going to see what happens. Okay. Just waiting for Howard to pick up on his end. Howard is a chronic pain patient and an activist who's going to be talking to us today about his meetings in Washington, D.C. with lawmakers and rallying for the rights of chronic pain sufferers. Hello, Howard. Do we have you on air? Hello, Howard? Can you hear me? Okay, Howard, can you hear me? All right, testing again. Hello, Howard. Howard, okay, we appear to be connected. What's going on? Call started. We're dealing with a new device in the studio today, so please bear with us as we're working our way through the technical issues to connect to our guest. Howard is from Iowa. So we're trying to connect with him via the Skype. And did he call on the studio line? Oh, but that's going to be... We had him on before. I wonder... Well, maybe what we'll... Yeah, maybe we'll put on some tunes right now. While we're waiting, let's see what we have in the audio archives. Alana's picking out the AMA song by Phil Oakes.
We are the nation's physicians. Yes, we give aid to our lobbies every day. We will fight against disease when the money comes with ease. And when we get together, we say, hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. We've divided up the sections of the body. Every day we specialize more and more. But we really love to stitch the diseases of the rich. We are sure there is a clinic for the poor. Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. And our waiting rooms are getting pretty crowded. It is sad to see our patients sit and bleed. But if you must use our ointment, then you must have an appointment, or who'll pay for those magazines you read? Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. And now the government is getting too ambitious. Yes, we know they want to socialize us all. Well, our oath was Hippocratic, but with money we're fanatics, so we'll see you in Canada in the fall. Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. Amalgamated AMA.
Okay, hello Radioland. We're going to test this out and see if this is working. We've got Howard as a virtual studio guest.
You're not coming through.
Okay, Howard, speak. I want to make sure you're showing up on the register. So please introduce yourself. Howard, please. Yes, please speak. Please introduce yourself. We're trying to make sure the audio is working.
Yeah, sorry about that. My name's Howard Tekaw. How are you folks doing today?
Pleased to be with you today, Howard. Thank you so much for joining us. I was giving you a little bit of an introduction when we were trying to do the setup with the technical issues. So it's Howard Tekaw, and you're from Iowa, correct?
That's correct. Yes, I am.
And you're a pain patient activist and...
pain patient activist and researcher, you name it, I do it.
So tell me, Howard, how did you come into this kind of work that you're doing?
Okay, well, actually, it just started out when I first received trigeminal neuralgia. Diagnosed with atypical trigeminal neuralgia, and that happened back in June of 2011. And I had went through, like just everybody else, mm-hmm. I went through a whole bunch of medications, different treatments, and I was battling that for at least, probably 2 years before I found what I found out to have actually worked, which is a neural stimulator.
Uh-huh. So for our guests, our listeners who might not be familiar with trigeminal neuralgia, what is trigeminal neuralgia?
Okay, trigeminal neuralgia is what's considered a facial pain. Uh-huh. It has three different branches of the nerve, mm-hmm. and the one nerve actually runs through the forehead. There's also another nerve that runs just probably just underneath, I should say, along the main of the cheek and then underneath the nose. Then also there's a mandibular one, which is goes to your chin. And with trigeminal neuralgia, it's actually one of the most painful nerve conditions known to science. Over like 100-some years ago, it was called the suicide disease. Mm-hmm. The reason why it was called that was because there was really not any effective treatment for it at that time. So a lot of people, instead of suffering through the pain, they decided to take their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But here in the last couple of decades, there have been some advances as far as treatments goes, and also as far as drugs. Generally, what we do is when you're first diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia or atypical trigeminal neuralgia, like in my case, they try you out with a class of drugs which is called the anti-epileptics.
Mm-hmm.
Now that includes like carbamazepine, gabapentin, Lyrica. Lyrica, you probably hear. You hear quite mm-hmm. a bit of on TV because it really does treat other conditions.
Uh-huh.
And there's like a few other ones. And then if those, for some odd reason, don't work, then they try to put you on pain medications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these pain medications can run for anywhere from, just doing various NSAIDs like naproxen, ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can also be used in conjunction with the anti-epileptics.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times, for some people, this combination might work. Some mm-hmm. many people, it does not. For me, of course, it did not work. So what I had to go to next was, in addition to those drugs, I had to go on to muscle relaxants.
Mm-hmm.
Muscle and nerve relaxants, I'm sorry. The one I went on was baclofen. That helped out quite a bit with easing the nerve tension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I actually had to go on to opioids.
Yeah.
I had ended up on fentanyl and hydrocodone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the combination of those plus the anti-epileptics that I was on did help quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also want to kind of backtrack on this. I went through quite a few different anti-epileptic drugs
mm-hmm.
before I found the right combination. Same thing also went with the various pain medications too. Even I had tried different opioids even to find what the right combination is. And I know a lot of people, they will go through, oh my God, yeah, I think I went through about 15 to 20 different medications before I found the various combination that worked well for me.
And you know what,
at that time,
what you're mentioning right now, and we hear this so many times, that for any given condition, for any given health condition, you can't say that there's just this blanket treatment that's going to work for everybody exactly the same way. We always hear about this diversity in what's going to work for an individual, that each individual has to go through trial and error to find the combination, the treatment, the medicines that's going to work for them individually.
That's correct. There's, like, gabapentin is a very popular drug. It might work well for me. However, let's say Sue down the street, she might have the same condition I have.
Right.
And it's not going to work for her.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can't really say, well, just because a certain drug works for you, you can't always say it's going to work for another person. You hope it does, but there's a good chance that it might not.
Right, and when
and
it gets to a point of...
the dosages are different, too, because sometimes I may be well relieved on a fairly low dosage of that medication, while somebody else might need to take twice the amount of dosage that I have.
Right, but the medical industry and law enforcement wants everyone to fit into a neat little box so that they can make blanket legislation and say this treatment for everyone, and it just doesn't work with human biology.
No, it does not. I wish it would. It would make our lives so much easier, and it would make the doctor's lives a lot easier.
Yeah, there's no one size fits all.
No, especially with chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So how did you go from being a chronic pain patient with this affliction to becoming an activist? What was really the impetus that you looked at this situation and said, I have to do something more?
Well, back when I had started on this, there wasn't quite as many, let's say, support groups, either online, either like on Facebook or Twitter or you name it. There wasn't that much support. There wasn't a whole lot of information. Believe it or not, that was not being told out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, well, somebody's got to do some research. Now, I did run into several people. I know I'm not really allowed to say any names, but they were very... helped me quite a bit in the beginning, and I think they know basically who they are. I learned a lot from them, a lot how to do research, where you need to look for the research, and not giving up, and looking for different trials, and whether it be like drug trials or trials for like neural stimulation, or you know, like doing other things, like looking into like something like acupuncture or acupressure.
You're really looking for a resource, a community to talk to other people who are looking for solutions to the same problem, to kind of pool different solutions. Were you able to find that online?
I was able to find a great deal. Eventually I was able to find a great deal of information, but it, you know, you had to do some digging. I mean, I went through a lot of different magazines, online books. I went through and talked to a great many people to find out some information or where I could get information from. It just took some time. And reason why I did that is because I felt, well, hey, some people who might be new to chronic pain, or specifically in my case, trigeminal neuralgia, they would have a good source to turn to help them on their beginning of their journey through this pain that a lot of us suffer through, and a lot of times needlessly, not unnecessarily have to suffer through unneedlessly, I should say, or whatever, and due to what's going on with the so-called opioid crisis, mm-hmm. which, you know, I'm sorry, I just really don't believe that there's actually a real opioid crisis.
Yeah, I don't believe in it either. This is a prohibition crisis. Whenever there's been a prohibition against any substance, it's made the substance more dangerous. It's just like when the government was spraying Paraquat on the marijuana plants, and then a bunch of youth ended up sick. Well, they're not being sick because they used marijuana. They're being sick because of the prohibition, because of the war on drugs and the collateral damage being waged.
Yeah. Well, even if you look back in the 1920s, when we had alcohol and drug prohibition, a lot of times the people that were making the alcohol, you know, they were wanting to get, they still needed customers, and people wanted it. So what they did, since they couldn't always come up with alcohol that you could drink, they put in wood alcohol. And there were a lot mm-hmm. of people that died from drinking wood alcohol because the suppliers could not get regular alcohol, and also mm-hmm. it was cheaper for them.
Howard,
to do.
I like where the conversation's going, but I was kind of looking for the segue from how you went from being a chronic pain patient.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And dealing with your affliction, to what did you encounter that made you say, I need to be an activist, I need to get politically active? So what were you encountering as a patient to bring
as
you...
As a patient, well, basically what I was encountering, what a lot of other patients encounter at the beginning, is that there was a lot of doctors were not very informed on TN.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people that were online that were not informed about TN.
Okay.
And I wanted to kind of help bridge that gap. Now, a lot of times I mm-hmm. have educated some doctors on what people with trigeminal neuralgia or atypical trigeminal neuralgia go through.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they really could not, the doctors themselves could not really fully understand what was going
mm-hmm.
on. And I gave them examples. I looked up recent articles. I went to, at the beginning, I went through a website called Living with TN, and it was a great resource at the beginning for me to find great articles, because they had mm-hmm. a really great moderator on there, and with access to tons and tons of information.
So you're coming to the doctors, you've done all this research, you have all this knowledge about this condition, and you're going to doctors hoping that they're also educated, informed people, and then finding that they don't know a fraction of what you've been able to find out just on your own and through living with the disease.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
The first neurologist I had actually seen, he had not heard of TN whatsoever, and actually not, could not really even diagnose me. I was giving him all the different symptoms I was having,
mm-hmm.
and I was asking him, well, is this trigeminal neuralgia, or is this atypical trigeminal neuralgia? And he would just really, to be honest with you, he just gave me a blank stare and said, huh.
Hmm.
I mean, he didn't know.
Yep. You know, and this comes back to the whole premise of medical freedom. I got the title Medical Freedom from one of our founding fathers, the Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He was urging early in our country's history for a provision to be made for medical freedom. He was saying we need something like that provision for religious freedom to separate government and medicine, and he foresaw the coming of a medical tyranny. And now the case is, when a patient goes to a doctor, there's like it's almost like a religion or something, that like a cult mentality, that if the patient thinks they know more than the doctor, then the doctor's feelings should be hurt. And the fact of the matter is that people have a vested interest in their own health. People who live with an affliction are going to learn all that they can about that affliction, not just what they read online or hear from other people who experience it, but from the facts of their own experience. And what's happening when people are bringing their wealth of knowledge into their treatment, they're being talked down to, they're not taken seriously. It's like, oh, you're not a doctor, so you can't possibly know anything about your condition. And this sort of attitude, this sort of separation that exists, and the fact that the doctors have the power to even withhold treatment if they just simply don't like the patient. They don't that patient's coming to them with more knowledge than they have, so they're going to do what they can to see that that patient doesn't get treatment. Just because their feelings are hurt.
It can seem like that, yes. Some doctors I can see having an ego.
Yeah.
I've come across a couple of them. And, but the thing of it is, what we have to do as patients is we have to realize that doctors are also human.
Mm-hmm.
So
we realize that as patients, but what I think we really need is to have the right to make that actionable legally. Like to have the right to say to the doctor, no, I don't want that treatment. Yes, I want to stay on this treatment, or I don't want that treatment. I want to craft a new treatment. Let's work on this. That the patient should have the right to direct that treatment, and that's something that should be upheld as a human right. So if that doctor says, well, I didn't want to work with that patient, they're difficult, then that could be actually investigated and examined.
Yeah, that does happen and can happen.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, yes, we are in charge of our medical rights.
Well, how far are we actually in charge of that? Because say you're a patient who needs something like an opioid pain medicine. If you can't find a doctor to prescribe that medicine for you, what are your options? Find heroin on the street or suicide?
That's correct. Some of the options.
Mm-hmm. And that's what so many patients are taking.
That you can try out too. There's like marijuana, medical or otherwise.
Okay, but I mean for the patient who has already tried everything. When you're a patient that has tried everything and you know what works for you, when you get to a point where you know what medicine you need, but no doctor will prescribe it because they're afraid of legislation, it's not so much a matter of self-advocacy. It's a matter of a need to actually change legislation, to change the system, to put forth a provision for medical freedom.
Yes, that's true. Yes, I agree with you on that. We need, you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need to change legislative thinking, and we need to get the laws enacted that would be on our side.
Laws enacted or removed
upon the doctor-patient relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand, that doctors do have egos, and that's where the first thing when I try to make contact with a doctor is try to talk with them, because we need to make sure that we have a good doctor-patient relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that, you're going to have a lot more going back and forth of ideas. The doctor's going to be a lot more at ease with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they are more likely to say, well, hey, this is not a crazy person. They actually are in pain. I should do something for them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that does not happen.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times doctors are, right now the way insurance companies have got doctor's offices running, they have to the doctor can only spend like 10 minutes now in the room with you.
Speaking of time restrictions,
not a whole lot of time.
I have to jump in here just now and say you are listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM, This is the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. This is a live show, so if you have a question for myself or my guest, you can call in to our studio line at 518-828-0290. Again, that's 518-828-0290. Whether you agree, disagree, have a question, or want to share your story, we'd love to hear from you here at WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. I'm joined today by Howard Tekau, who is a chronic pain survivor, patient, and activist. And we are talking about the current medical situation. And Howard, you just mentioned insurance and the control that they have on medical treatment. Let's talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, yeah, the insurance companies right now have way too much power determining what we get for for medications, for treatments, and it's ridiculous.
It is.
To be honest with you. I mean, I can't, some of these people, when I started out in 2011, I didn't have as much problem with getting drugs and getting medications, okay? But nowadays, everywhere you go, insurance companies are breathing down a patient's back to say, hey, you got to do this.
Yeah.
You have to do that. And that's not right. Now, here in Iowa, the U.S. Pain Foundation, along with myself, we had lobbied the state legislature to eliminate or let the doctor and patient have the choice of eliminating the step process. You know, where a step process is where, you begin at the one level, let's say at the just only trying drugs or risk, or and you go up to if that doesn't work, you go up to another level, like certain treatments, up up to whatever the ladder that you would have to get to get wherever that would work for you. But a lot of times, doctors and patients both know, hey, we know this is not going to work. It's one step. Why not? Can we not skip that step and go to the next thing?
Right, and it also might be dangerous for the patient.
Iowa, that we had changed the law. We got the law changed where you can actually skip that step, and insurance companies cannot do anything really about it.
Oh, very good for Iowa.
Yes,
that is because we see that a lot, and they'll always often you see physical therapy being required before a real diagnosis. So if a patient has a problem, they go into physical therapy, they could do injury or worse because they still don't know what is really going on.
That's true. Yes.
Physical therapy should come after a diagnosis. That's just common sense.
Especially if you have like a chronic back pain. If you don't know what the heck is going on, that physical therapist can do a lot more damage to you than, let's say, going up to the next step. That's ridiculous.
It also seems unfair. It seems unfair to put physical therapists into that situation as well. Because they're not there to deal with somebody who's undiagnosed and might have a condition that's going to be worsened by their practice.
Yeah, and it's getting harder and harder to find physical therapists now because the one reason is that there's a lot of pressure put on them now to do something even before a diagnosis.
Right.
Especially in the rural areas, like where I am at, It's not too bad here in our town, but there are some other rural areas that that are not too far away that are having problems with keeping physical therapists, and also they're having problems with doctors.
I think it seems like they're pushing a lot of the responsibility and the liability onto the physical therapists.
Yes, it is.
Because they're not
they
don't have the expertise to deal with a person who's undiagnosed.
No, they don't.
Should know what they're working with when they're doing physical therapy. And the insurance companies, I also want to mention that, we often talk about the extremely high cost of healthcare, but how did it get so high? How did it get so grossly overinflated?
Well,
and of course, we can look at insurance companies. because insurance companies is actually, it's been beneficial to insurance companies to have inflated healthcare costs because of the revolving door of money. And, you know, the thing I had the biggest problem with Obama's nationalized healthcare is that he did nothing to get rid of insurance companies. He just built a government framework around the problem being these insurance companies. And so we don't really have a straight up government healthcare system if insurance companies can get in there and tell the government, the doctors and the patients what to do. Last I checked, when businesses have control of the government, there's a word for that. That's called fascism. And it seems to be what we have now, and what Dr. Benjamin Rush, one of our founding fathers, was vehemently warning us about when he said we need a provision for medical freedom. And I think it's now more than ever, it's right in our faces that we really do need that. That was a big oversight.
Yes, because the insurance companies and corporations in general are very money hungry. Okay, they just want, they want to take as much money as they can, and the heck with, you know, the little person at times. You know, if you look at the cost of health care, you know, I'm sorry, I'm kind of track here, but you know, if you look at the cost of healthcare, a lot of it is because of what the insurance companies do require. You know, I know, like you say, many years ago, you went to a doctor's office. This is when I was little, way back in like the I'm not gonna say right now, but a long time ago, you went into a doctor's office and you just basically saw the receptionist and one or two nurses, and that was it for one doctor, you know. Right. Now you've got possibly two receptionists,
physician's assistants,
physician assistant, yeah, but also you have another person that's just working just for insurance billing only, plus your nurses. So, you know, those extra people, that costs money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another thing that's I'm gonna get into the pharmacy bit here a little bit, because pharmacy costs have skyrocketed.
Oh yeah.
Part of the reason why is because you have the pharmacy benefit managers, which is a kind of the go-between the drug makers and the pharmacies, and they're gonna take their cut. Where, like many, many years ago, it used to be the pharmacies just themselves. They would just go to the drug companies and they would, you know, negotiate their prices. And they wouldn't have to worry about a middleman. But the chain pharmacies have started propping up, and they don't want to deal with having to do with looking at prices. So they form what's called pharmacy benefit managers.
Howard, I'm wondering.
Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, now, have you been speaking with your local lawmakers about these issues?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes, I've been in constant contact with my state officials. My state and state senator representative. I've also been in contact with our U.S. representative.
Which U.S. representative?
I'm calling for him.
Which U.S.? Which U.S. representative?
His name is Dave Loebsack. It's Loebsack. Okay. And I've been in email, phone, and in personal contact with the. I should say personal contact with their aides anyway, with Senator Joni Ernst.
Okay.
Ernst, and Senator Grassley. That's Grassley.
That's okay. You don't have to spell them.
Yeah. So.
So how have these dialogue? How did you start dialogues with them, and where are things going?
Well, with just I'm gonna start out with Representative Lovesack. I just basically had looked online to see what his email addresses were and his phone numbers, and I just basically started calling and started emailing. And so we've been emailing back and forth. I'm sure it's probably mostly his staff has been in contact with me as far as the emails go, but they say but you know, the information that they are receiving from me, they are transferring to Mr. Lovesack. Sorry. And then I also did the same thing with the two U.S. senators, Ernst and Grassley. Eventually, actually, I heard back from Senator Ernst's Washington, D.C. office. And because I had been emailing them and trying to call them, and they actually called me back, and we had we've had a few good, fairly long conversations about how I felt about the opioid crisis, and they got in contact with the senator and let her know, and she also had set up where we could contact her local representative here in Iowa, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So I think there's three or four other of us that went to Cedar Rapids, and we all went to the federal courthouse there to talk with her representative, and we were flabbergasted. We got a really great reception from her representative. I mean, he listened to us. He wrote notes, asked questions. He was very receptive towards our feeling, towards us.
Now you say us. So this went from you personally calling, and is there a group that you met with this?
I did all the calling and arrangements of the meetings. Yes, but I had a few other people that were with me both times, and they were all really great as far as.
Was this a local group of
questions and everything like that?
Was this a local group of fellow chronic pain patients? Was this an organization?
Yes.
You
it was just a few of us chronic pain patients that lived close to Cedar Rapids. We all went there, and we were really impressed. Okay. I mean we were flabbergasted. And then later on, I had also set up a meeting with Senator Grassley's representative, also in the federal courthouse there. And he was actually pretty receptive towards us too. We were maybe not as much as Senator Ernst was, but he actually was there, and he asked us several pertinent questions. He was really, you could tell he was really listening to us. He also gave us some helpful advice as far as how to talk to the senator directly himself, which I'm still waiting to hear back from. But Senator Grassley's pretty busy because he is the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So and also I was really impressed too. I had printed up a whole bunch of information, probably like about a half of a ream of copy paper, and he was nice enough. He said that he would pass those papers to the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I thought, wow, that was great. Wow. So we've had some pretty good meetings, and we got our point across, and we felt pretty confident that the legislative aides understood our side of the issue.
Yeah, that's quite an accomplishment.
I wish that everybody else would. A lot of other people would do the same thing. It's not really hard to do. People think it's too hard to do. It's not. You don't necessarily have to get out of the house. You can actually call these people or email them. It's not hard to do.
How did you connect with other chronic pain patients in your local area?
Okay, well, in the local area, we had Well, to be honest with you, there was two patients that I knew personally.
Okay.
That have trigeminal neuralgia.
Mm-hmm.
One that lives really close by, and one that used, and then another one who used to work for me many, many years ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we've kind of talked with each other from time to time. More often with the person that used to work with me. But we like I said, we do keep in contact. And also, we had noticed in some of the other main national groups that there were some other people that were from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of got together a little bit. It's called the Cedar Valley TN group. And while we've only met once, but you know, we're planning other meetings, but we met once in a town called Cedar Falls. One of the members had a TN art show there, and they had it in a coffee shop there. Mm-hmm. it was almost for about a month during October of last year. And so we got together. That person actually had also had a TV interview done, and one of their local TV stations. And they came up. They had him on the morning news. You know, like the hour and a half broadcast. And he was on. They had him on there several times. And of course, then they also had excerpts on the noon and the evening newscast too.
Mm-hmm.
And his artwork is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He did a great job on the artwork, and we went up there and we all met and sat down and talked with each other, and I met some really wonderful people up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just a great time.
So your group that you met with the senators, with the pain patients that were with you representing your cause, they're all trigeminal neuralgia sufferers?
No. There was a couple of us, there was actually only one of us besides me that was actually that has trigeminal neuralgia. Mm-hmm. The other ones had various other chronic pain issues, where it was going from like spinal or leg mm-hmm. issues.
So how did you initially make contact with this group of people reaching out to chronic pain patients beyond trigeminal?
I actually started on Facebook.
Okay.
Because I had looked up on a search for groups that were, mm-hmm. First of all, that were related to trigeminal neuralgia.
Uh-huh.
Then I basically branched out to just chronic pain in general. And that's how I met a lot of people. I'm in so many groups right now. It's
mm-hmm.
I'm probably in about 80 or 90 groups right now. So that's a lot of groups to keep
me too.
And I actually either admit or moderate in, I think, actually 8 of them. So,
mm-hmm. So
it keeps me pretty busy.
If you would like to share any Facebook groups, websites, anything that you're connected to with our listeners.
Sure. Now, there was one group that I had started,
mm-hmm.
and it's called TN, ATN, ON, O-N, Sufferers Group. That was the one I started.
That's a Facebook group?
There's another excellent one on there, which is called TN... and then in quotation marks, exposed, and then our story. That's a pretty nice group there. And there's also another great group there, which is has a hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Fight for a cure. TN Fight for a Cure.
TN Fight for a Cure.
Yeah, hashtag TN Fight for a Cure.
Okay.
And that's a wonderful group to be in. There mm-hmm. have a lot of wonderful people.
Yeah.
Also, there is let me go back on. Sometimes I have a hard time remembering names because the medications that I am on. I forget what the heck I'm doing sometimes. And let me get some of the names on here. Okay. One of the groups I'm really involved in right now is the Don't Punish Pain Rally, which we are having on September 18th. And for those of you guys in Iowa, it's happening in Cedar Rapids at the Green Square Park. Okay. There's also Pain Patients United. And also, let's see, oh, there's so many good ones here, but...
It is interesting how in the past few years, Facebook has pretty much exploded with chronic pain support groups.
Oh, yes.
And so many of them are not just like support groups, like let's all come together and make each other feel better, but about political activism.
Here is an awareness page that I am part of. It's called Trigeminal Neuralgia Awareness Fight for a Cure. It's a wonderful page that was started up with by a good friend of mine. And she's a really good activist and helps me quite a bit with a lot of different things.
And currently, are you able to get sufficient treatment for your condition?
Yeah, right now, yes. Because I'm not totally pain free, because I know I'm never going to be that way. But I do have a neurostimulator implanted for my atypical trigeminal neuralgia, and it helps get rid of about 80 to 85% of the pain most of the time. Okay. There are sometimes you're going to have some breakthrough pain.
Yeah.
Okay, but I also do have other conditions that unfortunately I don't have a stimulator for, but I do have what's called hemicrania continua. Or sometimes they're called paradoxal hemicranial something or other. I can't remember exactly. But that's what I was told it was called. That's basically headaches of unknown origin, and that basically affects the other side of my head that does not have the trigeminal neuralgia. And sometimes if I can get migraines and cluster-like headaches on that side. I don't get exactly clusters, but cluster-like. Okay, and that especially gets right behind my right eye, and that's really painful. But I do take a medicine for that, so that helps quite a bit. But also, I do have polyneuropathy of my arms and legs. And I take gabapentin to help out with that. But again, if I have breakthrough pain, I do take some hydrocodone for that if necessary. And then I also do have kratom that I take. And that works pretty well for me also.
Kratom is an herb, and so tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, well, basically what it is, it's an herb. It's basically, it's kind of like, it's grown in mostly in Southeast Asia. It is grown off the bark of a certain tree there. I can't remember the name of it, but it's basically in the coffee family. I'm sorry, not bark, but it comes from a tree there, but it is part of the coffee family, believe it or not. And it works really, really, really well. There's different various strains of it.
I believe it's another plant like the poppy flower, the Papaver somniferum, that contains some opiates.
Yes, and it works really,
and
really
it's accessible
really,
through
really
the plant.
Well for me. I use what's called a red strain. And that's really good for pain. There's yellow and green strains in each one of them. One is good for a little bit for pain and also for mental health And then another one is just basically for it works really well for anxiety. And I can't remember which one is which, because I usually just take the red strain myself, but which works really well for the pain.
Right. And this is a plant that has helped a lot of people. It's helped some people to come off of opiate pain medicine. Some people, if they combine it with cannabis or if they take it with their opiates, they get better benefits. And it's another thing that the government keeps making noise about prohibiting.
Yeah, they are making noise on that. There have been, I think there's what, currently right now, there are 5 states in the country that do not allow the sale of kratom. And then there's also 1 state, which Tennessee, which had recently changed their laws on kratom. They made it where people who are 21 or older can now get it in Tennessee, as long as it's not the what they call synthetic kratom. Mm-hmm. It has to be the loose leaf or powder form. But at least that was a victory of sorts, because Tennessee originally had said no to kratom. So,
yeah, that is.
So
that's definitely
a victory of sorts there.
But there are other
states that are considering legislation on it. I have not heard what the status is on each state. I know here in Iowa there was just a little bit of a brush with it a few months ago, but that was cleared up because there was some confusion between state agencies, which was if it was illegal or illegal, but it actually is legal here in Iowa. So,
yeah. Hopefully.
I have no problems getting it.
Hopefully the age of illegal substances is going to go to the wayside. Because it's definitely, it's been a parade of failures since its inception. And the more people are becoming aware, just like with the cannabis. I mean, for so many years, decades, you had so much misinformation out there about it. And still, just like today, there were still people in chronic pain. There were still children with epilepsy. There are countless people who have died because of that prohibition. Because as children, they weren't able to get CBD oil to cure their seizures. You know, there is an enormous death toll that isn't even spoken of related to the drug prohibition. And we are down to our last 2 minutes of the show. And so at 3 o'clock, the next block of programming will come on while we're talking or not. So just want to give you that heads up. Howard, thank you so much for being on the air with me today and sharing your experience and the work you're doing. And it is really wonderfully encouraging to hear about some victories like the one in Tennessee or the one in Iowa where the insurance companies cannot dictate dangerous treatments to patients who are yet undiagnosed. That's what I like to hear about and hope to hear more about as we envision medical freedom, as we work together, strive together to make it a goal and a reality here in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really need to get our legislators on board and society too.
Yeah.
There are so many misconceptions.
Oh, there are. I know.
We need to get the laws changed.
And the attitudes changed.
Yes.
There's so much prejudice and bigotry that's been heaped on opioid users, and the society has justified it. Oh, that's okay to think of these people this way. When it's all just, it's misinformation. It's just not true.
And the people that are chronic pain patients that are on opioid treatments, they are being treated like drug seekers, and that's not right.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Howard, for being on the air with me today. It's been a wonderful show. Great to talk to you. Tune in next month, second Monday, from